Do I want to win a Super Bowl ring? Yeah, I do. I'm hungry for one. That's probably the only thing that I haven't done yet in my career that I haven't accomplished. But I'm not going to say that's going to fulfill my career, fulfill my life. I'm living in San Diego. I have great friends. I have a great pastor. I have a foundation here. I've been able to plant seeds in a community to make my home. So there's a lot of rings there that I've been able to gain in 13 years. I'm proud of those rings. So for me to say that I'm going to give all that up for a Super Bowl, you know what? I'll take my rings of life.
In late April 2012, Junior Seau, the legendary NFL linebacker known for redefining the position in the 90s with his passionate and relentless style of play, spent the weekend celebrating the 50th birthday of an old buddy, Mark Walczak, who was a tight end and long snapper for the San Diego Chargers during the early part of Seau's career. Walczak had made the trip from his home in Scottsdale, Arizona to Oceanside, California, a seaside town outside of San Diego where Seau lived after retiring from the NFL in 2009. Seau was a native son and a legend in the area. He was born in San Diego and played football, basketball, and ran track at Oceanside High School before becoming a top recruit at USC. He lived in a gorgeous $3.2 million beachfront house on the Strand, some of the most coveted real estate in Southern California, and he seemed to be living the good life, basking in the glow of his playing days and picking up accolades from his incredible career. But despite the outward appearances, Seau was struggling. He kept in shape working out at a nearby gym about a dozen blocks from his house, and the regulars loved seeing him there. Seau would mix with the other gym rats and was seen as a gregarious and fun-loving presence. On this particular weekend, he departed from his usual routine to grab lunch with Walczak in nearby Carlsbad, and the day eventually morphed into a sort of a pub crawl, moving from lunch to an Irish bar, and finally ending up at a steakhouse in Oceanside. By the time they returned to Oceanside, the group had grown to include three women and another friend of Seau's. He had a beautiful, red-haired, on-again, off-again girlfriend named Megan Noterer at the time, but Seau had a weakness for women. He wasn't particularly shy about it either. All the women he was involved with knew, at least on some level, he was not interested in monogamy. But Noterer seemed to accept the arrangement. That night, Walczak found it interesting to see Noterer on the couch watching The Apprentice on TV when he and Seau returned from the night of carousing. The following day, Seau played in a celebrity golf tournament hosted by former NFL star receiver Tim Brown. He teed up with Hall of Famer Jerry Rice, who later said that Seau seemed, quote, lively on the course and was absolutely crushing the ball off the tee. This was a recurring theme with Seau. He always seemed to be in great spirits. Anthony Munoz, a Hall of Fame offensive lineman, saw Seau about a week earlier and said, quote, there was just no indication of any problem. It was the same old Junior I've known all these years. But behind this happy-go-lucky persona, Seau's life was really coming apart. Although he'd earned more than $60 million in his career, court filings in a child support case showed the retired star claiming $78,000 in losses at his San Diego restaurant and another $300,000 loss on an investment in a Ruby Tuesday restaurant that had recently closed. He'd also taken out a $1.2 million loan against the value of his Oceanside home in 2011. His ex-wife, Gina DeBoer, accused Seau of having an expensive gambling habit and living extravagantly, although she maintained that he never missed a child support payment. And there were even more life-threatening concerns aside from any financial troubles. In October 2010, Seau was arrested for domestic abuse by an ex-girlfriend. He was never charged of the incident, but just 9 hours after the arrest, Seau drove his SUV off a 90-foot cliff in Carlsbad. He survived without serious injuries and insisted he'd fallen asleep at the wheel, but close friends and family worried it may have been a suicide attempt, pointing to the timing with the arrest and his financial difficulties at the time. And on May 1st, Seau had a fairly conventional day. Morning workout with his girlfriend Megan, complete with a bag of breakfast burritos for all his gym buddies. But by the evening, Noterer says she spent a quiet evening at Seau's house, eating in and watching a Lakers playoff game. And at 9:30 a.m. the next morning, Noterer made a desperate call to 911 after finding Seau lying on his back in the bedroom. Junior Seau had taken a .357 Magnum revolver and shot himself in the chest. Paramedics responded, but it was too late. Junior Seau was just 43 years old. I'm Derek Hoffman.
I'm Jason Beckerman.
And this is Last Days, Junior Seau. Seo did not leave behind a suicide note, but there was a piece of paper in the kitchen of his home with the lyrics from his favorite country song. It's a song called Who I Ain't, written by his friend, Jamie Paulin, and describes a man who regrets the person he's become.
I never made a deal with the devil, but I broke promises to the Lord. I've tried to be the man I should, but sometimes I fall short. I'm not a man of anger, I never meant to hurt no one. But there are things in my life I'm sad to say I've done.
In the weeks following news of Seo's death, the city of Oceanside went into a tailspin of rumors and speculation. He truly was a local hero and such a charismatic presence around the small city, and the lack of any warning signs in his public demeanor meant that everyone was confused and looking for answers. Walczak, who'd been with him the weekend before his death, said, quote, "It would be easier for me to believe that you were from Mars than it would be for me to believe that Junior killed himself." Oceanside Police Lieutenant Joe Young felt compelled to give a statement to quell the rumors, saying, quote, "I'm aware that there's a segment of folks out there who don't want to believe that Junior took his own life, and I respect that. But the bottom line is, there's nothing to indicate anything other than suicide." The reality of the situation was fairly straightforward. Despite outward appearances, Seo was suffering. He'd suffered from serious bouts of insomnia for at least 7 years before his death, and often used powerful sleeping aids, such as Ambien, to address the problem. Seo confided in one of his gym buddies, Nancy Emsley, about the extent of the problem, telling her he'd wake up around 1 or 2 in the morning and not be able to fall back asleep. Walczak echoed her statements, saying, quote, "I know he's had a very difficult time sleeping over the years. I think it's gotten worse and worse. Lack of sleep creates huge anxiety." According to Seo's autopsy reports, he had no illegal drugs or alcohol in his system, but did show traces of Ambien. According to the FDA, Ambien can cause suicidal thoughts or actions, particularly in people with pre-existing depression or anxiety, if not used carefully as prescribed. There are also warnings about using the drug in combination with alcohol, and Seo was known around town to be a social drinker. The combination of factors could shed some light on Seo's mental state in the moments before he took his own life. You know, Jason, in the aftermath of this story, it was huge. You were here at TMZ when Junior Seo died. There was a lot of confusion because he truly was an example of a person who was different by all outward appearances than he was behind closed doors. And I sort of think of like Chris Farley a little bit, like a guy who's the life of the party. Everyone to a man would say Junior Seo was out. He would buy drinks for people. He was gregarious, affable. He was just so full of energy. But behind the scenes, this guy was struggling.
There are a couple things that came out that you brought up at the beginning of this pod. First, the financial difficulties, something nobody knew about. Again, he had made tens of millions of dollars in his career. And there's an assumption when somebody makes that kind of money, and you haven't heard of, there's Anton Walkers of the world and others who
right, with gambling habits and things like that.
Blowing the $15 million at a stint or whatever it is. You'd never heard that about Seo. As a matter of fact, one of the most beloved guys that's ever played the game from a, both from a player perspective, he's fantastic, but also from a personal perspective, people loved him. And there were never any indications that he was doing anything untoward. And so he had all this money, as everybody perceived. And so it was stunning to find out that he had actually blown through a lot of it, or at least the speculation is that he blew through a huge amount. The gambling rumors started coming out. And then you have this overlay, which you're going to get into, of CTE that we, there was, you know, this was a story that was really starting to gather some momentum that people, that former NFL players, as we'll talk about, really show this heightened risk of suicide. Maybe it's linked back to CTE.
It's true. Everyone in the wake of his death started to think about the 2011 suicide of former Chicago Bears star Dave Duerson, who also shot himself in the chest and had left a suicide note requesting that his brain be studied for possible signs of CTE or other brain trauma. Seo himself did not leave a note, but he also shot himself in the chest, which is important because that led many people to speculate that he too wished to leave his brain intact so scientists could study the effects of CTE potentially on his brain or other injuries suffered during his career. And during his career, Seo was known for his willingness to play through injuries, but did not have a reported history of concussions that was very extensive, although his ex-wife said he sustained a lot of them during his playing career. She said, quote, "He always bounced back and kept on playing. He's a warrior. That didn't stop him." His autopsy did not initially reveal any signs of brain damage, and none of the accounts suggest he was exhibiting any of the mood changes and irritability often associated with CTE. So initially, people are saying, oh, this is a guy who played a lot of football. He's just like Dave Duerson. But that was not what the initial autopsy report showed. Still, the speculation persisted, so Seo's family decided to donate his brain tissue to the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Strokes, which is part of the National Institute of Health. And on January 10th, 2013, Sayo's family released the findings from the NIH study that showed his brain did have clear signs of CTE. Three experts and two government researchers reached the same conclusion, finding that Sayo's brain tissue was similar to autopsies from people with, quote, exposure to repetitive head injuries. Sayo's family ended up suing the NFL over the brain injuries he'd suffered during his playing career and opted out of the proposed global settlement for all similar lawsuits at the time. And in 2018, the Sayo family reached a confidential settlement with the NFL. And to this day, I would say he's one of the most famous of the 345 NFL players to be officially diagnosed with CTE from the NFL.
The harsh reality of suicide statistics tell a grim story for the league. The suicide rate for NFL players is six times the national average. John Lynch, a really famous nine-time Pro Bowler who worked out with Sayo in the off seasons, said the transition to life after football can be overwhelming. Quote, every NFL player has trouble transitioning into the real world. You're lying if you say you don't. Superstars like Junior have the most trouble. When you retire from the NFL, you're a young man by real world standards. You've got a lot of life left to live, and suddenly you're hit with the realization, I'll never have that again. There's no way to replicate football. It's physicality, it's euphoria, the adulation, the outlet for your energy and passion.
I wanted to pause on what Lynch is saying, because he's not just saying CTE is what killed Junior Seau. It is both things. You know, he was struggling financially. He had these brain injuries that he was dealing with.
He had the sleep difficulties, which we all know can really contribute to a tremendous amount of anxiety.
Yes. And your life is just full of excitement and you're always on edge when you're in your playing career. And then there's a huge come down and you're a young man when you retire from the NFL. We think of Sayo as an old guy at the end of his career. He was in his 30s.
Yeah. And he was only 43 years old when he dies. So he's by any measure, a really young man with a long, long life to live. But he had all these creeping anxieties, these creeping difficulties that were coming upon him, that mixed with the fact that he's got CTE, and we know that CTE has a direct link to suicides. We've seen it before, Dave Duerson being the first example, and we've seen it. There's now movies about it, the Will Smith movie about this very thing. And look, the NFL has really made an effort to change it. There are so many rules changes that are resulting directly from Junior Seau's death and the other people who have been diagnosed with CTEs. There's different helmets, different player safety guidelines.
Concussion protocols.
It was an interesting comment that, was it his ex-wife who said that he was always one of these guys, he was so tough as nails.
Play through pain.
That's an antiquated way of thinking. People who play through concussions are now, they're not smart, they're not tough, yep. They're idiots if you do
that. That's right, yeah.
And when you have a concussion, you take yourself out of the game, you get yourself checked out, you don't go back in if you've suffered from one. And when there's exceptions to that, like Tua Tagovailoa a couple years ago played through concussions and the NFL sort of signed off on it, it was a scandal.
Yes.
Because you just don't do that kind of thing anymore.
And you really needed the league to step up and impose these restrictions, because there's a macho culture that goes along with football,
sure,
especially that you're expected to be a warrior and play through pain. Sayo embodied that. You know, he was like a folk hero of playing through injuries. He was carrying this legacy. Yeah. He was one of the early Samoans in the league and so forth. And he loved it. He loved that adulation and being a guy who wouldn't sit on the bench. But to your point, that's not the best way to
There's that old adage of like rub some dirt on it and get back in there. That's no longer the way we think anymore, and for good reason.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and pause there. When we come back, more on Junior Seau's football legacy. You know, Jason, Junior Seau was the most beloved athlete in San Diego history and probably the most iconic Samoan athlete to ever play in the NFL. And he really relished all the adulation that came with it. After his playing days ended, the relative quietness of retired life may have felt like a stifling, boring prison sentence. You know, Junior Seau's unfortunate death sent shockwaves through the sports community. But what exactly made him such a special presence both on and off the field? So let's talk about on the field first, which is really where he became very famous. The accomplishments on the field sort of stand the test of time. Seau has been called one of the, quote, most dynamic players of his era for what he brought to the linebacker position in the early 90s and 2000s. Norv Turner, who coached Seau and faced him as an opponent, said, quote, the number one thing about Junior was that he was such an explosive player. He'd defeat one-on-one blocks, and he was a great tackler. His quickness allowed him to roam out of position, but he had such great instincts that many of his gambles defensively would end up paying off. And even when they didn't, offensive coordinators had to account for the unpredictability in designing schemes just to neutralize Junior Seau. And he was known for his incredible work ethic, leadership in the locker room, and willingness to play hurt, as we've already discussed, which are traits that really endeared him to those old school guys like John Elway and Bill Belichick, who love guys who don't want to come out of the game, want those big moments at all times. For his accomplishments, the Chargers retired his number 55 before the 2012 season opener in San Diego, and he was posthumously elected into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2015, the first Samoan to make it into the Hall of Fame. His daughter, Sydney, spoke on his behalf at the induction ceremony.
I think my father would be completely overwhelmed and honored to be inducted into a class with the most elite athletes and professionals. First and foremost, he would thank the seven buddies out on stage with him tonight. I mean, I know this isn't my speech to give, this is his. He spent 20 years within the league and he deserves this moment. All I can do is humbly attempt to thank the people within his life and career that made this induction possible.
But Seau was really so much more than just an incredibly gifted football player. There are lots of talented athletes, perhaps even more talented than Seau, who don't transform into cultural icons. Chargers president Dean Spanos said Seau was, quote, an icon in our community. He transcended the game. He wasn't just a football player. He was so much more. Seau started the Junior Seau Foundation in 1992 with the mission to educate young people through child abuse prevention, drug and alcohol awareness, recreational opportunities, and anti-juvenile delinquency efforts. And beyond those charitable endeavors, Junior Seau became larger than life because of his charm, charisma, and good nature, and how it radiated from him in every public setting. You can see it on display during his late-night talk show appearances, like this one in 1994 with Jay Leno, when he joked about how he got the name Junior.
People call you Junior, but is Junior your name?
Junior is my name for one reason.
What's that?
Because no one can say my first name.
What is your first name?
Tina. There it is. That's why it's Junior. Junior Seau.
Tina?
See, there you go again.
T-I-N-A?
No, T-I-A-I-N-A. T-E-N-A. Not Tina.
T-E-N-A. No,
yeah, you
mean?
Went Tina.
T-E-N-A.
What does it mean?
What does that mean?
Whatever you want it to mean.
Oh, I don't know.
It could be anything.
Oh, I see. So Junior just, well, Junior's easier.
Yeah, Junior's a lot easier, you know? Yeah.
Now, did guys make fun of you with...
Maybe under their breath or something.
No,
they wouldn't. Hopefully they wouldn't tell me.
Ronnie Lott, a fellow USC alum and Pro Football Hall of Famer himself, shared a close bond with Junior Seau. They were both USC alums, NFL superstars, and understood the dizzying fame that comes with such athletic success and the difficulty of transitioning to life after football. Reflecting on his friend's death, Lott said Seau, quote, had that rare ability to make you laugh, that rare ability to hug you, that rare ability to make you feel as if you were his buddy. That's all he wanted. He just wanted to be your buddy. How many people live their life wanting to be people's buddies? And Seau's daughter touched on this core quality of her father at the conclusion of her tearful speech in his honor at the Hall of Fame ceremony in 2015, and I thought it only appropriate to give her the final word on his extraordinary life.
Dad, you gave us your time, your presence, your love, but most of all, you gave us your heart. And I know at times it seemed as if everything you accomplished in life wasn't enough, but today and every day since you held me in your arms for the first time, you were more than just enough, you were everything. And I hope this induction can exemplify the fact that you are more than just Junior Seau, number 55 and a buddy. You are a light. And I want nothing more than to see you come on stage, give the speech you were meant to give, give me a hug, and tell me you love me one last time. But that isn't our reality, and I know that his athleticism and talent made him extraordinary enough to make it into the Hall, but it is his passion and heart that make him truly legendary and deserving of this tremendous honor. And I would just like to thank my family and everyone else for all their support through this process. Dad, I love you and I miss you. Congratulations, you made it.